Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Chris Loffrey. Lori Walsh is off today. Believe it or not, in 1943, the U.S. military realized that it didn't have the facilities nor the personnel to train pilots, navigators, and bombardiers. Now, given that time, one would be led to believe that would be a problem. Today, we talk about the CTD program. With us is Terry Neal King. Welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is author and historian Paul Higbee. Paul, welcome back.
Hello, Chris.
Well, who knew that in early 1943 that the U.S. military didn't have the facilities nor the personnel it needed to train these pilots? And we'll get more into that, but first we are honored to have Terry Neal King join us today. His father was instrumental in what was the Army Air Force called the CTD program, or the College Detachment Program. Terry Neal King, let's begin by saying, you know, that was really hard for me to believe that this was even an issue in 1943. As history tells us, World War II was an air war.
So. Well, you're correct. You're absolutely correct. The military determined early on, in early 43, as you mentioned, just a little bit more than a year after the U.S. entered the war, that they did not have the facilities or personnel to do the training for the number of air crewmen they needed. So, consequently, they contracted with 150 colleges and universities around the country. Small as a Black Hills Teacher College was, and large colleges like the University of North Dakota, Penn State, Texas A&M. And the idea was that current faculty members at those institutions would do the educational instruction, while at the same time, military training would be done by a staff of enlisted personnel and officers that would be stationed at the college. Another component would be important part of it was flight training, which was done at the local airport, Spearfish Airport. This was a 5-month program, and after the 5 months, the cadets would be transferred on to other Air Force facilities where they would receive additional and advanced flying training before continuing on to flight service overseas during the war.
One would have thought that this would have been thought of long before 1943. Am I correct by saying that?
You would think. Now, there was a there was an ongoing program that was started before the war in 1938 called the Civilian Pilot Training Program, where civilians were trained, and that program was still going on when the College Training Detachment Program started. But even with the civilians that were being trained, the military, like I said, they just needed more crew members.
Having gone through a form of flight school myself, it just blew me away when I read that these courses were only 5 months long. It just seems to me like it should have taken more time than 5 months.
Well, they received a lot of instruction during that time. The academic instruction included 60 hours in each of the following courses: mathematics, English, history, geography. They received 180 hours of physics and about 24 hours of civil air regulations. That, in addition to the military indoctrination they received, basically including infantry drill, military etiquette, physical training. And then also, like I said, the vital part was the basic flight training. It was 10 hours of single-engine aircraft training at the local airport. So, I mean, their days were full, and the fact that the military and the country needed these people quickly, I think, determined that 5 months was about all they could spare.
Let's be clear, and I think you alluded towards it earlier. They weren't just picking people off the street. These were people that were already in the military and the people that were highly qualified to do this job.
That's correct. These cadets had already been pre-selected to go through flight training. They would have also completed their basic training. So when they arrived at these colleges and universities, they held the rank of private in the Army Air Force. But they were already destined to go into the flying service.
Let's bring Paul Higbee into the equation. Paul, how did you come across Terry Neal King?
Well, I had heard for years that there had been this program at Black Hills State, and I wondered about it. There were a few records of Black Hills State, including in the 1943 yearbook, but I found that people often confused the CDT with the civilian aviation program that predated the war. And I just wondered, there had to be a record, I thought, somewhere of the Army program that came to Black Hills. And then one day out of the blue, about 3 years ago, Terry called me up and he said, my dad was in that program. He was an officer. He was there the whole time. And I've got his records. And I was amazed when he drove out to Spearfish and showed me the records. His dad was also the historian. He wrote what looks like a doctoral thesis describing everything that they did in Spearfish. He had tremendous photographs, which turned out to be photos of the famous Spearfish photographer Joseph Fassbender. And I just looked at that material and I thought, number one, it's entirely complete. I can't imagine anything more you could put in there. There's even a newspaper that the men put together every few weeks, copies of it. And I thought, I really hope we can keep this in South Dakota after it's been gone now for 70 years. And Terry was very, very open to that.
Terry Neal King, first of all, I'd like to welcome you back to South Dakota. You're in Spearfish right now. So let's talk about the 93rd Army Air Force College Training Detachment. You mentioned Black Hills State. That's what we know it as. But back in the early 40s, it was called Black Hills Teachers College. Now, your father, Neal Lyon King, was sent to Spearfish. What was his role going to be upon arrival?
Well, he was a Denver banker by profession, and he enlisted in the Army Air Force in February 42 in Denver, and went through Officers Candidate School down in Miami, Florida. And one of his first assignments was to come to Spearfish in February of 1943, along with four other officers, to form the 93rd College Training Detachment. His function at that time, or his role at that time, was the adjutant, the number two in charge. And towards the end of the program, in March of 44, the commanding officer was transferred, and then at that time my dad assumed the role of commanding officer until the end of the program, which occurred in May of 1944.
Where was he prior to going to Spearfish? Was he in Denver or was he somewhere else?
He was in Denver. He was born and raised in Colorado, and he was a banker at the First National Bank of Denver, and like I say, enlisted in February of 42. Came to Spearfish then, and that's how I became familiar with Spearfish, because while my dad was here, he met and married my future mother, who was a resident, a native of Spearfish. And they were married in July of 1944, just before he was sent overseas to the Pacific. But that started my relationship with Spearfish. My family traveled here very frequently when I was a child in the 50s and 60s. But I'd been away for a number of years until 2015, as Paul mentioned, when I came up to see if there was interest in the material I had. I realized that nobody's getting any younger these days, and I just wondered what would happen if something happened to me. Where would all this material land? I realized it was historically valuable, and so consequently I came to Spearfish looking for some interest in it, and fortunately I was very fortunate to come across Paul and some other people that are most interested in what I have.
Paul Higbee, as a historian, you must have been salivating when you saw what Terry Neal King had.
Oh, absolutely. It was just an incredible record. And Terry said there were 150 of these detachments across the country. I can't imagine that there's any one of those that is better documented than the one that was at Black Hills. I just can't think what else you could put in there. And then kind of the icing on the cake is this incredible photography, some of it aerial photography, done by Joseph Fassbender, the local photographer.
So, Terry Neal King, I'm gathering that your father must have been an incredible saver, that he kept all this stuff, because, I mean, some of that stuff usually ends up at rummage sales and things like that because it's worth nothing, but it's worth a lot.
Absolutely, and that was my big fear. And fortunately, or maybe unfortunately, as my wife would say, I sort of acquired his desire to save things. But he did save a lot, and thankfully he saved this. And I'm just happy that it's going to be able to be preserved in the archives at BHSU for future students and historians to study and to enjoy into the future.
Let's spend a couple of minutes, if you will, and I'm going to give you a chance to kind of just tell us what's in the collection. Like, what if you were to sit down right now and look at that collection, what are we going to see?
Well, as Paul alluded to, there are, from the time I was a child growing up, I was fascinated with this photo album that contained probably 50 or 60 high-quality black-and-white images taken by Joseph Fassbender. When I first met Paul in 2016, he saw the photographs. I think he realized at that point how valuable they were. And he said at the time that he had not seen a number of these photographs. And I thought, wow, knowing of Paul's reputation as an author and historian, if he hasn't seen this material, it's got to be pretty valuable. In addition to the photographs, as Paul mentioned, my dad did write at the end of the college training detachment program a complete history of the program, which goes into extensive detail on the running of the detachment. And then lastly, my father maintained a scrapbook. It looks basically just like a child's scrapbook. But when you look inside, there are pages and pages and pages of clippings taken from local newspapers like the Queen City Mail or the Rapid City Journal that he had cut and pasted in this scrapbook that basically starts from its inception in February 42 on through the end of the program when it was terminated in early 44. So it's a very extensive collection.
So World War II ended in September of 1945. How long did the CTD program, it's early 43, how long did it exist? I mean, did it end in 45?
No, it ended May of 1944. Hmm. The program at that point was deemed so successful in that the military determined at that time that it now had sufficient numbers of air crewmen, pilots, bombardiers, and navigators, that the program could be terminated. And it was terminated at all the colleges at the same time. So in May of 44 was the last graduating class at Black Hills Teachers College.
It makes me wonder if modern-day flight schools were hatched out of this program across the country. I just wonder about that.
It could very well be.
Okay, in the few minutes we have left, Paul Higbee, what's next? What's going to happen today? There's a big doing this afternoon, this evening sometime, and then what's going to happen to this collection? Because it's going to live forever.
It is going to go to the Case Library at Black Hills State. Tonight at 7:30 in Spearfish, the meeting of the Spearfish Area Historical Society, Terry is going to project some of these photos, talk more in depth about the program. That's at 7:30 at the Spearfish Senior Center. The other thing that's exciting, and we didn't know this when we were talking 3 years ago, Terry knew that there was a detachment flag, and he was hoping he could locate it, and he has. So we're going to have that flag and return it to Black Hills State this evening. And Terry, that's quite a story how you located that flag after all those years.
Please tell it.
It is an interesting story. As Paul mentioned, in 2012, I came across this photo album again, and there was one picture in it that that particularly intrigued me, and it was a picture of the group, the detachment, the five officers and the 11 enlisted men. And I got to thinking, I said, I wonder if any of these men might still be alive. Now, the picture had been taken in March of 43, so that was 70-plus years ago. Even the youngest of this group would have been in their 90s. But I thought it was worthwhile, and by fate, the first person I looked for was the then commanding officer, a gentleman by the name of Homer Lewis, Captain Homer Lewis. And I found him, quite interestingly, very much alive at age 93, living in Texas. And for the next 4 years, he and I maintained a phone conversation, an email exchange. And he always told me that he had the flag of the 93rd, and he said that he would send it to me after he knew that I was going to start donating this material to the college. Unfortunately, he never found the flag before he passed away in October of 2015. However, after that, his wife and I resumed the email correspondence, and I related to her the story about the flag. And she said, well, I'll keep my eye out for it while I'm cleaning out his many things. Well, lo and behold, last year, the flag arrived in my mailbox, and it's as pristine as the day it was presented to the college in 1944. And I thought, what better place than to return this piece of history to the college, and I'm happy to do so.
Terry Neal King, thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate it. Welcome to South Dakota.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Paul Habee, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.